Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even going to ignore you.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, a week dominated by the debate this week over potential changes in gun laws, which we'll get to in a minute. But first, West I Was There, new Justice Brian Hagedorn promised to be a pro-law judge at his formal public ceremony. The Speaker's task force on suicide is given this sad number. There were 133 veteran suicides in Wisconsin last year. A DNR official: lateral lines into homes are the worst source of lead in drinking water in Wisconsin. And finally, the sad story of Amanda, a child abused by two sets of foster care parents. Wish I was there.
This robe does not empower me to enforce my personal moral views or policy preferences or political views on anyone else. I'm not here to advance any agenda other than faithful application of our Constitution and our laws. I will be a pro-law judge.
In 2014 in Wisconsin, we had 133 veterans commit suicide in the state of Wisconsin, and that was a 36.1% rate based on a 100% population, and that tracks almost exactly with the national rate.
You're trying to give the illusion that we're going to get 20 students completely through dental school for $1.5 million, and that is not the case.
On an annual basis?
I'm not talking an annual basis. If you listen to what I said, 20 students completely through dental school. That's why I say, stop talking in circles. You're going to have a lot less questioning and a lot less suspicion from this panel if you're just straightforward.
Lead service lines are the greatest contributor to lead in drinking water. So it's the volume there. Yes, there may be some in the faucet, in the leaded brass there, but the highest volume of lead that's coming out of that system is from that lead service line. If we can address that lead service line, we can get much closer to zero.
Data on long-term adoption stability, adoption disruption, and lifetime family connections is very scarce, and most often is not gathered from the point of view of the child. Most adoption data treats an adopted child as a brand new child of the adoptive parents. Amanda was an abused child appropriately placed in foster care. Amanda was adopted by her foster parents. Amanda's foster parents then sexually abused her. Amanda went into foster care again and later aged out of foster care. There is no data showing that Amanda had a bad adoption. The data does not show that she was in foster care twice due to abuse by separate sets of parents.
Talk about what each of your caucus's specific, maybe top two or three priorities will be from a policy standpoint.
I'm trying to look for topics where there isn't a partisan bent, where you don't start with things where instantly people go to their corner and begin to argue, and instead focus on, here are things we know we could do that don't necessarily line themselves with Republicans on one side and Democrats on another. So I think you will see a lot of efforts coming out of the Assembly Republican Caucus focusing on those type of topics and not the ones where we're going to be trying to take away people's Second Amendment rights or all the other things, which will do nothing more than reinforce the idea that people think politics is broken.
I don't think anybody in our country right now can ignore gun violence and mass shootings, and to say that there's nothing we can do, not universal background checks. I mean, we want to protect kids, but we want to allow violent criminals to have the right to buy firearms. I mean, that's crazy. We should do everything possible we can while respecting Second Amendment rights, and I think we're going to have both a universal background check bill and a red flag law that should get bipartisan support, that respects Second Amendment rights, that, you know, do our best to try to minimize the risk that's out there.
The fallout from the tragedies in El Paso and Dayton continue to be discussed in the state capitol this week, JR.
Mm-hmm.
You had some meetings. Well, first of all, the biggest news was when the Governor Evers, Attorney General Josh Call, Democratic legislator, said, we have drafted a background checks bill. We want it considered. We'd like a vote in the October session. So that's kind of the chief headline. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, Senator Fitzgerald, who we will hear from in a minute, along with the governor, said background checks will not pass my house. And Speaker Voss said There is no consensus for a red flag bill. And we need to stress mental health. And as you reported yesterday, Paul Tittle in his message said, look, we've got some mental health bills that would provide grants to mental health clubhouses and nonprofit organizations, allow tax deductions for psychiatrists who come to Wisconsin and practice here. Fill us in on what actually happened. There was some meetings.
So what happened was Governor Evers last week called for meetings with Fitzgerald and Voss to talk about these issues. Voss immediately said he'll meet with them, but they're not doing anything to take away Second Amendment rights, and he would rather fill in the governor about some task forces that have been they've been working on.
Yeah.
They met late Wednesday afternoon. Fitzgerald spoke with the governor by phone, but hasn't had a chance to meet personally yet. But really, this is the same pattern we've seen for years. There's a mass shooting. There is a immediate call from Democrats for some kind of action legislatively to respond to this.
Yeah.
Republicans raise concerns about Second Amendment rights, start talking about mental health issues, and then the fervor dies down until the next mass shooting. I see the pattern happening again. Now, the one difference this time might be what's going to happen at the federal level, because you have President Trump now talking about background checks. But with President Trump, it's been hard to read what he really wants. In reading national stories and kind of pundits weighing in, he indicated he wants strong background checks. He's also talking about the need to build more facilities for those who have mental health issues, which some people are going to argue is not the answer to mental health issues. But there might be a way to move some things federally, maybe. That's where the action might be. I mean, Fitzgerald said that there was a law passed in the 1990s that's similar to a red flag law, not quite the same thing, but that you could expand that maybe to address some more issues. But he's not seeing a thirst in his caucus to do more. And part of the dynamic is, think about the way the state looks. Democrats are in urban areas. There's more of a push for gun control in urban areas, in suburban areas, than rural areas, whereas one Republican told me, even the Democrats like their guns out in the rural areas. So if you're talking about making, to Fitzgerald's point, making people register their guns, that raises a huge flag for a constituency that votes Republican and goes, that's like too much government interference. Now, the bill Democrats talked about on Thursday, it would have an exemption for family-to-family sales.
Right. Antiques. And if you're on active duty, those there are a bunch of exemptions in there.
But it still is the same debate we've seen for years about background checks, about Republicans philosophically saying, one, they don't agree with it, and two, they don't think it would stop what's been going on.
Okay, but I want to go deeper. I want to get into the nuance here. If you look up the Marquette polls, Charles Franklin says, background checks have always, as long as he's been doing that poll, polled above 75%. 78% of households with guns favor it. 83% of households without guns favor it. And 76% of self-identified Republicans favor it. 79% of independents, 83% of Democrats. Mm-hmm. So this is another one where the governor said, like Medicaid expansion, the public supports it. But it's, I agree with you, it's not going to go anywhere.
Well, the question is, the public supports it, but is it a motivating issue that makes or breaks a race? And that's kind of been one of the issues. Like, yeah, there are things that are popular, like Medicaid, legalizing medical marijuana, but are they issues that like really drive people to polls and decide who they're going to vote for? Yes, there are single issue voters about guns, no two ways about it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look again, those maps that are drawn, rural Republicans aren't worried about what people in Madison, Milwaukee think about guns. They're just not. You know, unless we're getting pressure back home, you're not going to move them off that position.
Well, we're about to hear from Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald and Governor Evers. And in this clip, Governor Evers says, just bring it up, just take a vote. Not going to happen?
No. I mean, in talking to a couple Republicans this week, they said, yeah, they could see a discussion happening. So now, one of the hard things is they've been on a break since the budget was signed in early July, right?
Like July 4, I think.
They kind of took off after that.
Yeah, two.
There hasn't been really a caucus yet where they've all come together and said, okay, here's the agenda for the fall. Here's where we're at on these issues. We're mostly hearing from leadership. So I'm sure there are individual members in both of the Republican caucuses who are open to these ideas. But in terms of 50 votes in the Assembly Republican caucus and 70 in the Senate GOP caucus, I don't know if that's there.
Okay. This is a good time to hear from both Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, and Governor Evers. Please.
I talked to the governor for 3 minutes, and the vast majority of that discussion was about his veto on the study of security related to the state capitol. And then he brought up red flag and a couple of things, and I said, yeah, I'll talk to you about those items anytime you want to sit down and talk about it. I was part of a debate on the floor of the Senate back in 95-96 session, in which we passed, believe it or not, through a voice vote in both houses, and Tommy Thompson signed into law, I think, what already qualifies as red flag laws in Wisconsin. Universal, the trouble there is always going to be there's going to be a constituency who vote Republican, and that means registering your firearm.
Do you personally support it?
No, I don't. I don't because of that. You know, I mean, a personal sale between either family members or friends, which happens all the time. If you'd have to go to the state or to the federal government and have to register that firearm, people are not going to go for that. I know my constituency isn't going to go for that.
Today, I'm calling on the Republicans and the Democrats in the legislature to pass a bill requiring universal background checks here in Wisconsin. Earlier this week, Republicans said they couldn't weigh in on universal background checks because there wasn't a bill. Well, by God, we've got one. And we have it today. So I want to be clear, every single legislator in this place, in the Capitol, needs to be asked on the record whether they support or not support this important piece of legislation. And if they don't, they need to answer why they think firearm purchases should be different for different people, so that their constituents understand why they won't take a reasonable, moderate step to make our communities safer. It's time to be partisan, and it's time to lead. It's way past the time to get something done and to do what's best for the people of Wisconsin.
The Elections Commission met this week after the lead security official wrote a memo. This was before this week's meeting, warning that cyber attacks could expose confidential information, destroy digital records, prevent the timely printing of poll books, disrupt communications with voters, expose voters to potential cyber attack, prevent the timely distribution of absentee ballots, and prevent the display of election night results. Well, Jar, before we talk about what they did, this is the same agency that was telling us a few months ago, we have beefed up security, we think we're pretty tight. Mm-hmm. So maybe we're not?
They had clerks around the state log in the same day and try to see what was going on, and found that a number of them are using an outdated system. Now, a couple caveats. Not everybody logged in same time. And number two, talk about beefing things up. We have a very decentralized system of running elections in Wisconsin. You have how many municipal clerks in the state? And so you have like all these thousands of clerks who run the show. They send the stuff to the county reports to the state. That's the way it was set up. It's the way it's always worked.
Yeah.
And so there are some clerks who are running on very old systems, and there's a worry about there being a vulnerability there to what could happen with a hacker. Now, so this week, the Elections Commission staff had recommended buying 250 computers, like as this emergency action.
$300,000.
Buy a bunch of computers, send them out to these clerks to take care of this issue.
Yes.
Commissioners raised the concerns, well, why should we buy them a computer if they haven't taken care of themselves, right? I mean, this is kind of like their issue. I mean,
of election security, perhaps?
Well, you're also got all these other clerks who took care of their stuff, spent the money.
And updated it.
And so we're going to basically punish them by paying for those folks to update. So this back and forth kind of ensued about whether they should be doing this, loaner program versus giving it. So eventually, they approved 25 computers, a much scaled back version of the ask. Now we go forward, and the question is going to be, how secure is our system? And there's going to be that perception, that question going forward all the way through by November because of what happened in 2016.
But your newsletter update on this issue referred to, our Wisconsin officials were scared by what happened in Georgia. Hmm. A cyber attack in Georgia showed just how poor that system was in terms of being secure.
Now, the Elections Commission has sought to say, look, you know, there are all these safeguards. We audit, you know, returns. We still keep the paper ballots, right? I mean, the ballot bag, after you feed it through your machine, so like I vote on an optical scanner, so I do my line across. After I feed it into the machine, they keep a ballot bag to, you know, be able to go back and look at those things. So we have a trail, or at least where I vote, I'm not sure how everybody's system is set up, but there are safeguards such as those in place to make sure the vote comes out right. Now, the issue becomes on election night, if there's confusion, if there's chaos, if there's doubt about remember, we've been referred to as the tipping point state for the presidential election. Now, we're still a long ways out. We'll see if that actually happens. But if we are nip and tuck between President Trump and Democrat X, and there is some doubt about the results, that could be a very bad thing. And that's the worry, I think, about going into this election without things nailed down to a T, is we have to be ready for the scrutiny of what could come.
What do you think happens next in the debate over how secure in Wisconsin is our election system? What's the next step? Because we're looking at spring primary, spring election, and then a August primary, and then the November presidential election.
So the good news is we'll get a couple of trial runs between now and November of 2020, but they won't be nearly the capacity, the demand on the system that we'll see November of 2020. We're talking like this spring, all right, like the Supreme Court race. The presidential primary.
Same day.
So 1 million people voted in the Democratic primary for president in 2016, 1 million-ish Republican primary for president in 2016. I don't know if we'll get that kind of turnout on the Republican side because so far nobody's really challenging President Trump in a serious way or a threatening way. Democratic side, we could still be really important come April of 2020. If we are, maybe we'll see 1.5 million, just pulling number out of the air. Remember, that's less than half the number of people who vote in November of 2020. It's a trial run, but not the same kind of demand on the system that we'll see that November election.
Okay, but correct me if I'm wrong. President Trump carried Wisconsin by 30,000 votes.
Less than that, 23?
Okay, so these are some very
to remember
significant questions, very serious questions.
John Kerry won Wisconsin by 11,000 votes, roughly. 2000, Al Gore, 5,579? Give or take a couple hundred votes.
You wonk.
So that's the thing. If it's that close, you're talking at the 2000 election, you're talking a little more than a vote per ward, mm-hmm. right? Something mm-hmm. like that. And I know that the Republicans of 2000 who wanted to go back and have a nuts down to the studs audit of what happened because they were convinced that Bush won Wisconsin. There was something funny going on, but it never happened because of Florida. Imagine us being Florida. Okay?
Yeah.
The whole thing in Florida 2000, imagine being Florida next
hanging
fall.
Hanging chads, although we will not have hanging chads. Yeah. Right. The whole issue of vaping, the legislature has toyed with this. The governor's budget recommended fairly steep taxes, mm-hmm. and the Joint Finance Committee cut that new tax back. But now you have 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 hospitalizations that our State Department of Health Services is tracking that may be linked to vaping. So we have lawmakers circulating bills that would raise the age to buy vaping products to 21. As I said, the Health Department is investigating if recent hospitalizations of vaping are linked. Symptoms, shortness of breath, fatigue, chest pain, coughing, weight loss. The takeaway from our chief health official, Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm, urges people to avoid vaping products and e-cigarettes. Anyone, especially young people who have recently vaped, experiencing unexplained breathing problems should see a doctor. So that's a long setup, JR. Are we likely to see in the fall session any action on vaping?
I really don't know. Again, going back to the part where the caucuses haven't met in a while to know like what the agenda is, we're just now seeing in this past week or so, committees really starting to fire back up, seeing more hearings on bills. They've been very quiet for a while. Not only that there's nothing going on, but for the most part, been kind of quiet. We're starting to see action. The question, though, is what can they get done? What do they agree on? I don't know yet. I won't really know until the caucuses meet. And leadership has a chance to go, okay, we have agreement on X, Y, and Z. Let's go ahead and knock it out.
Okay. We'll put this on the list for our September show previewing the fall session. Mm-hmm. Okay. WisPolitics, you guys reported this week, Senator Lena Taylor, a veteran Democrat in the legislature, considering running for mayor. Your quote, I've got on my Converse tennis shoes. Normally when you wear tennis shoes when you are ready to run, it really seems clear that people want change. What's the dynamics of this?
Well, a couple of things. One, Tom Barrett has not yet said for sure he's going to run for re-election as Milwaukee mayor. We're pretty sure he's going to run, though.
He was elected in 2004.
His backers have put out like his fundraising numbers on a regular basis. He's got a healthy war chest. He's in a good position financially to run. The question has been, who's going to challenge him and what kind of challenge we're going to see? I'm not an expert in Milwaukee politics, but you can just read the headlines. I mean, there are good things happening in Milwaukee, right? Bucks Arena, convention coming, all this stuff happening. But there are also problems in Milwaukee. I mean, just talk about the problems in the African-American community. The complaints, the development is focused on downtown, not the north side. things like that. Who could challenge Tom Barrett, give him a real run for his money? Because last couple of campaigns haven't been that competitive. He's won fairly handedly.
That's right? The right term, handedly.
So can Lena Taylor capitalize on the issues in Milwaukee to make a case for change? Now, there's some other people toying the idea of running for mayor of Milwaukee, so it's not a given that she would be the alternative to Barrett. But, you know, Lena has her own issues to talk about, right? One, go back and look in 2016. She was challenged by Mandela Barnes, then a member of the Assembly, for her Democratic primary for her Senate seat. Won easily, deep reservoir support in her Senate district. Can you take that Senate district and build it out to the rest of the city and have a winning combination for a spring election? Maybe. She's got to raise money, got to have a good message. She has her own baggage, right? This incident with a teller at a bank was a year and a half ago now, something like that.
Yeah.
So things like that, there have been blow-ups with Lena that have, you know, raised some eyebrows. So how effective will she be as mayoral candidate? I don't know.
Do you think
sure.
her star in the Capitol has fallen? She was taken off the Joint Finance Committee by the Senate Democratic leader.
Yep.
She is in the minority, so she can't pass any bills. Yeah, she brings a inner city Milwaukee perspective, especially emotional. Last week we talked about her childhood sexual assault. Her, so is looking at mayor assigned, but she ran for Milwaukee County Executive once. In
2008, didn't do very well in Scott
2008.
Walker.
So is her capital star fallen?
Here's the thing.
Fallen?
There's a pattern. Corey Mason, mayor of Racine, Eric Genrich,
Mayor of Green Bay.
Democrats who were in the assembly, in the minority, and said, you know what, there's something better to do than sit here, being down here in the 30s. Now, Corey won in a special election. Eric gave up his seat to run full-time for mayor and won this past spring. So, yeah, there are Democrats who go, you know, even if the maps change after 2021, once the, you know, census is done, we get, you know, a court challenge most likely, it may be a long haul to get out of the minority. So it may be an attractive thing to run for mayor. But again, you've got to raise the money, have the message, build the infrastructure. There are challenges for anybody, not just Lena, but anybody looking to run statewide or citywide. She now has to go build that infrastructure. Once
have and I just want to say, in addition to mayor, running for county executive is another potential exit doors for some of these people. Tom Nelson, Joe Parisi, and Jim Cruiser.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, your stock report.
Fascinating.
This debate just, take it away, Jay.
I don't know this bill is going to go anywhere. But I still have it rising into this because you have this odd dynamic of Republicans arguing for greater access to birth control. That's not to say that like all Republicans are opposed to birth control or anything like that. But usually you see Democrats pushing the idea of greater access to birth control. This is a bill.
Calling it access to health care.
Yes. This is a bill that would allow pharmacists to prescribe oral contraceptives, okay?
Do pharmacists want this?
It seems like they're interested in this option, so there's some concerns.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not sure like where everybody's at. But why I bring it up is that you had this committee hearing where you had three Republican sponsors pushing a bill. Got blowback from two Republican members of the committee.
Dave Murphy.
And anti-abortion groups are going, what's the demand for the Catholic Conference? I mean, it's not the usual alliances you see in the Capitol. A couple of Democrats marked they weren't sure what to think about this. Now, the Democrats, there's a suspicion that this is all about covering your butt. So Republicans have pushed a number of anti-abortion bills in the last few years. There's been an argument from Democrats pushed back on by Republicans that some of the stuff is also aimed at birth control. So, yeah, you can argue that there's a bill here that would potentially provide some Republicans some cover next fall to say that, yeah, they're pro-birth control. And talking to folks, though, that's not why the bill was pushed. These Republicans are pushing it because there is a want for greater access, especially in rural areas, to health care. And this is part of the push. It's just an interesting dynamic to watch this bill play out. And the question is, will it go anywhere? I don't know.
It got a public hearing.
Got a public hearing.
It's very unclear whether it's even going to get a vote.
Yeah.
This is the first time in my tenure I've heard of this bill.
And what's interesting is there's a Democrat, Representative Sargent, pushing a similar bill. And they both came out about the same time. Now, one of the complaints was from Democrats, why didn't you work with Melissa Sargent on her bill? The answer was, they knew about the competing bills.
Okay.
The other thing is, in the Republican bill, there is an age. So 18 or older, you could get this prescription from a pharmacist. There's no age limit or requirement in the Democratic bill, I believe.
Okay.
Joel Kitchen, who pushed the bill from up in the kind of Door County area, said, that won't fly politically in my caucus. This is your best chance to get something. And you have Kathy Bernier, state senator from up in the Chippewa Valley area. and Mary Felskowski of Northern Wisconsin, Irma, saying they're looking for a push in their rural areas for access.
Well, I'm going to look up whether the pharmacists are registered in favor of the bill. Okay, mixed.
So veto. So last week, Governor Evers vetoed the seventh bill, which pushes him just past Governor Doyle for the most bills vetoed in the last, you know, decade or so, 15 years.
You're not counting his 78 budget veto.
No, that's
okay.
Separate.
They're talking separate bill.
Full bills being nixed. However, he's not going to get anywhere near the 50-some bills that Doyle vetoed in like his first session or second. It's a 53 and 47 in back-to-back, 53 and 45 in back-to-back in his first term. So we're not going to get there. And why? Because the legislature is not producing a whole lot of fodder right now,
that's
right?
True.
So back, you know, we have to go back ancient times, it seems like, but 03, 05, and 05, 06, Doyle's first full term, public control legislature, right?
Yeah.
They were still firing out, like, all these bills about, you know, property taxes and stuff, and Doyle was vetoing them. Once Democrats got full control in 08, so 9-10 session, that was the seven vetoes. Even Democrats don't get along sometimes, much like Republicans don't always get along. But now, Republicans just aren't passing that many bills. I mean, the answer is kind of long view. Go back the first 8 years of Scott Walker, when they were in charge. They did all the big ticket items, right? They were even bogging down somewhat last session about what's left to do.
Our next set of priorities.
Because now it gained much more parochial.
What are we going to grab off the shelf and pass?
Much more parochial interest being done, right?
Yeah.
Now they're going, okay, what's it worth to do? Because they realize that you have a Democrat in the East Wing now. If you pass a bill that's like this firebrand bill, he's going to veto it. So Is there a point? Now, the abortion bills, those are going to make a point, right?
Yep.
They want to put him in a difficult position. National attention on that issue, did them. Other stuff, I'm just not seeing like a big Now, what's also interesting is I'm seeing more bills with bipartisan co-sponsors than I think I've ever seen. I mean, like, that getting hearings and stuff and getting out there because they realize, hey, we need to work together if we want to get something done.
Democrat on the East Wing. Okay, your following is very interesting because it's good news.
Very good news.
Take it.
For the first time since 2015, opioid deaths have dropped. We have opioid deaths dropped this past year, the lowest level since 2015. Now, I'm not sure if it's because of what we've been doing or because of national trends. Nationally, we saw like about a month ago, they announced nationally projection that they're going to be down this year. So, but in Wisconsin, we've been on the forefront of a lot of efforts to try and cut into opioid addiction and treatment. John Nygren from Marinette, a very personal issue for him, pushed a number of provisions the last several sessions, almost all of them bipartisan, overwhelmingly passed. And so it could be a byproduct of the attention to that, plus the attention of prescriptions, right?
Yes.
I think prescriptions are dropping as well.
They are. And that's been a press release. Even Governor Walker put it out when he was still in office.
Mm-hmm.
The number of opioid prescriptions dropping significantly.
So there's a lot of attention, too, to those who produce opioids and the way they pump them out.
Right.
For a long time, that's, you know, maybe part of what's going to decline the knowledge of what's happening out there or happened.
Okay, we got about 10 seconds. Foxconn executives in Wisconsin this week meeting with the governor, meeting with Speaker Voss, meeting with key players. We don't know what's going on.
Nobody said. They all said they met or talked about things. That's it.
Okay. Well, we can't guess and we're not going to. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Be prepared to catch us on our podcast. That's Rewind for August 16th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.